The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first edition of Post Pro Res for the year 2021. And here I am reunited with WH Park, who has flown all the way over here to Canada just for this show and for this site. Thank you, WH, and welcome to the new year.
I feel this joke has run its course, John.
No, we're going to keep running it until it really sinks in with everybody that you have officially moved.
Well, I mean, I did see you in person 2 days ago.
Does that mean we have to we can officially end the facade of you and I being at any kind of distance? Now we have officially met. You gave me two very nice magazine gifts. I appreciate that very much.
Well, I mean, we were socially distant. We were very responsible in our meeting. We were outside. It was very cold.
Yep.
But
yes, we were.
I did enjoy seeing you in person again.
Yeah, because now we're into another lockdown here in Ontario. So we got one socially distant visit in outdoors a few days ago with Mike Murray. And now we're back to I don't know what exactly all the rules are, but they are on paper clamping down now more significantly. Although I went for a walk today and plenty seemed open.
I'm you know, still working, so I don't know.
Well, we're going to talk about state of emergencies on this show, and we have lots to discuss, lots of stuff to catch up on. We're going to go across the promotional map in Japan, and we're going to start with New Japan because I want to get some of your thoughts. We're not going to do any kind of in-depth look back at Wrestle Kingdom, but some of the Cole's notes, WH, your highs and lows of the two-night Wrestle Kingdom 15 event, and off the top, did you think the two nights worked this year?
No, honestly, like I thought both nights had a lot to be desired. There were like maybe two good matches on each night that I enjoyed, and then everything else was just filler to me. And like, to me, I'm looking at like this King of Pro Wrestling thing, the New Japan Rambo thing, and I'm just like, why? You couldn't get like Tomohiro Ishii, Minoru Suzuki, Sho Tanaka on the main shows, but you get this, especially night two. They have that opening match with, you know, Fale, Chase Owens, Bushi, and Toriano, and it's like, we're the good people. We're the people I actually want to see. Like, why are we doing this comedy gimmick on the main show? Like, are you serious? Like, you couldn't. And why is El Fantasmo fighting Hiro Takahashi when Sho was like killing it like the whole year during the pandemic and stuff? And like this. You know, they fly this guy in, go all the way, all the trouble, John. Fly him in, get the testing done, put him in quarantine just so he can have a mediocre match with Hiromu Takahashi, and then someone else could have a way better match with this guy. And then I'm thinking, why is Master Wato and Taguchi fighting for the tag straps? Could have been like, you know, Robbie Eagles, maybe Sho teaming up with him, and they could have had an awesome match. Like, you know what I mean? But I will say, Okada versus Ospreay, very good match. I really like that. And I really loved, I think my favorite match both nights was Shingo Takagi versus Jeff Cobb. And I can't complain about those. I will say though, John, like I was watching both nights, and if you notice, certain members of the Bullet Club were wearing white gear, you know? And I thought, you know, this is kind of a perfect metaphor for how 2020 went. So like, you know, the start of the year, we were all in Tokyo. We were having fun. We were enjoying all the wrestling and the food. You, me, Wei, a bunch of our friends. That's Jay White, you know, in white. He looks good. I got to say, Jay White looks good in white gear. And then, you know, we get into the pandemic, COVID starts coming along, and then we get to Tamatonga in his, you know, in his haircut phase, his clean shaven phase. And I'm thinking, yeah, earlier was better. It's way better. And then we get progressively down to Chase Owens. The year turned to complete shit. So that was one of my big takeaways from Wrestle Kingdom.
Well, there you go. You could follow the Bullet Club aesthetic as a roadmap for 2020. I didn't. That is definitely a WH Park guide to 2020 through the look of various Bullet Club members.
Jay White to Chase Owens.
In terms of Kota Ibushi's two-night performances, and this being really these two nights about establishing him as the flag bearer for New Japan, how did you think that came across and going with Kota Ibushi? What do you see for the year ahead with Ibushi?
I was predicting this all along because, like, it's a redemption story. Like, he had to redeem himself from last year's Wrestle Kingdom and from the G1 this year, like losing the briefcase to Jay White. So I thought it was fine. I was much more of a fan of the Naito match than I was with the Jay White match. But this is his year to be, like, firmly established as a main event guy. Like, he's never been given the ball in the company to this extent, and it'll be interesting to see if they want to throw some roadblocks in his way, like they did with Naito and in Evil in the middle of this year, this past year. I want to see, like, who's going to step up to Ibushi, and is he going to have a long reign, or is he going to have some hiccups along the way and, like, hold the belt two times? Because I do think he has to join that pantheon with, like, the Okadas and the Naitos and the Tanahashis even, but he needs to have, like, a long reign for that to happen.
Yeah. Who are you looking at? Like, obviously, we're going to get Sonata right out of the gate in Hiroshima next month. But then, you know, we have the announcement of the New Japan Cup. That should produce, I would say, like, a pretty significant challenger for him. I think that you're looking this year at, you know, I'm sure Evil will find his way back into that with a title challenge at some point this year. But you have the partners in Tanahashi. You have the inevitable rematch with Okada. I think there's a lot on hand for Ibushi this year, and I could certainly see him holding this the whole year.
I think New Japan Cup is going to produce either – my prediction for that, top of my head, is either Osprey or it's Tanahashi.
Yeah, win Osprey in there too. Yeah,
and they're going to – one of them's going to challenge him for the belt stemming from winning the New Japan Cup.
I think it came off really well. Like, I think that, like, there's a lot of energy behind New Japan with Kota Ibushi in this role. It's a curious decision going with Sonata in this role, that it just feels he has, you know, come up short one too many times, that this feels almost overkill to do it again next month. Like, where do you see Sonata in the decision to make him the immediate challenger in February?
I think it shows where they've slotted him, to be honest with you. I think they've made their decision about him that he's going to be the, you know, perennial challenger. He's unlikely to ever hold that belt. I don't see where he's done anything to warrant being elevated to, like, championship level, to main event level, and carrying the company even for, like, a month or two. I didn't see that with Evil, and I think that was a failed experiment. I think Sonata would be a failed experiment just because, and I think he knows this, and he works to that level. And that's very common in New Japan. You'll find certain people work to their push, and that's it. And they don't do anything beyond that, except in certain occasions. I feel sad saying that, John, because I've liked Sonata for a long time, like since his time in All Japan, and then when he was in Wrestle One, when that company formed, and then when he joined New Japan, I was very excited about his prospects and company. I thought his first 2 years, he looked really good.
Yeah, I can't say that it would have been a different outcome if they had gone the Sonata route instead of Evil last year, but I think, like, their positioning on Wrestle Kingdom this year, I think that tells you, like, at the end of this whole thing with Evil, there he is at the Dome wrestling with Sonata. Sonata goes over, and, you know, New Japan is not one to, you know, put that rocket on a guy and give up. So I don't see them just discarding evil this year. I think he will get his chances once again, but I'm not disagreeing with you. Like, that was, I would argue, like, of, in terms of elevation, like, yes, you had the backstory of Ibushi, but Ibushi was there. Evil was the one that had the greatest elevation in 2020, and it didn't take. I think that was pretty clear by the end of the year. Like, it did not take, and I'm interested to see how they reposition him this year, because I'd be surprised if they just kind of discard him back into a mid-card role without another chance at the top.
I also think we have to look at Hiromu Takahashi. I think he's going to be positioned in 2021 to have a major story and a major elevation out of the junior heavyweight division and into the heavyweight division before.
As a headliner, that clearly is the goal for next year. And I think the fact that you're getting these back-to-back nights in Hiroshima, and, you know, the first night, it's Cho and Hiromu in the main event. I think that's a very big sign of what they want this junior heavyweight championship to be.
I mean, so I'm in event of like night two of Wrestle Kingdom. I thought that's the highest the junior heavyweight title has ever been placed in New Japan. So like, it's significant. And I think he's very likely going to be, I definitely think he's going to be in the New Japan Cup again. I'm going to put money on that he's going to be in the G1 this year, John.
I think that would make a lot of sense this year. I think when you look at, is Darth Vader joining us as well?
Oh, sorry. It's the plumbing in the house. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I think Hiromu, it's certainly interesting to watch him with that championship this year. And conversely, like, Shingo Takagi, I think, feels like someone that is, you know, not a homegrown star, but nonetheless someone that I think came out of Wrestle Kingdom the hottest he's been in New Japan and is now poised for his biggest program to date with Tanahashi coming up.
I don't know, John. Like, I mean, he's one of my favorite wrestlers. He has been since his Dragon Gate days, but I kind of worry that he's going to be the new, you know, Tomohiro Ishii. Like, he's one of our best workers. He's going to have a great match with everyone. But you know what? We don't see him beyond, you know, a certain level. Like, and that's the never level. And I worry, because I do think he can kill it. If you've ever been familiar with his stuff in Dragon Gate, he could be an amazing top line heel, because he's done it before too, with like amazing results. Like, I'll point to his run as the leader of the heel faction for Zerk in Dragon Gate. It's like one of my favorite periods of Shingo Takagi. And I think if you translate that into like New Japan, like, if he's the leader of a faction, like a heel faction, much better than Evil, much better than Jay White in the Bullet Club.
Like, I'm definitely not on my own suggesting this. Everyone has. But the idea of looking back at 2020, and we had three Naito Takagi matches throughout the year, and Takagi in that role, I think we're looking back at that in a much different light.
I mean, just on a work rate level, yeah, Takagi blows away most of the roster, in my opinion, and definitely blows away Evil.
So coming out of Wrestle Kingdom, of course, there was the state of emergency that's been issued for Tokyo, Saitama, Chiba, and Kanagawa. And the result of that has been not so much a lot of promotions like stopping operations or anything, but we are seeing adjustments, especially on this upcoming tour, where it's less matches. We're looking at like 5 to 6 match shows from New Japan. They've bumped back the start time by a half hour for most. You can still run events up to 5,000 people or 50% capacity. So not gigantic changes, but they have adjusted somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think these changes really have any teeth. I mean, I look at, you know, here in Ontario, John, like, nothing that the government does, whether it's the municipal government or the provincial government does, like, in terms of measures, seems to be working. Like, the numbers just keep going up. And I just see the same thing in Tokyo and the surrounding regions, because I think one of the key things that they haven't done is let people work from home, and they still have people traveling on the trains. And, you know, like, you've been there, John, you know, like, those trains can get crowded, you know, regardless of whether there's people going to work or not, but even more so during like the work week. And then, you know, like, people will still want to go out and stuff like that. And I think that's one of the key things that's caused a spread anywhere in the world.
What we haven't had yet is a positive case on the New Japan roster. If that were to happen as a hypothetical, do you think that that shuts everything down for New Japan. Like, what do you think the response would be like? Because thus far, they have operated without a positive test.
Well, that we know of, John. I mean, like, if there's any place that you can probably keep that a secret, it's probably Japan. They're pretty, like, you know, stringent about privacy, I think, in hospitals. And as well, like, you can keep things kayfabe over in Japan a lot easier than you can in the United States, I feel. If there's a public acknowledgement of someone having COVID on the New Japan roster, like, depends on who it is, John. Like, honestly, if it's one of the young boys, it's not as big of a deal as if it was, like, say, you know, Tanahashi or Okada. That would be a big deal. I think that would be, like, really embarrassing for the company. But say it's like, you know, just let's say it's Bushi, for example. No, they won't be that big of a deal. But it's Naito, yeah, it's a lot more significant.
So looking ahead, it's a really packed calendar for New Japan beyond the three New Beginning cards, where we have the main events. I guess Nagoya is the first one coming up at the end of the month on January the 30th, as I'm just looking at the cards here. That will be the Shingo Takagi, Hiroshi Tanahashi headlined show, along with Satoshi Kojima, Will Ospreay, and Hiroyoshi Tenzan against a great Okan. That's going to be the great experiment, that match. Well, what is that going to look like?
It's a battle of the Mongolian chops, John. Come on, you're not excited about that?
I will be watching our third of five matches on the 30th, and then they're back-to-back nights in Hiroshima, the 11th and 12th. But it doesn't stop there. After the New Beginning Tour, they've got back-to-back nights at Osaka Joe Hall at the end of February, then the anniversary card at Budokan Hall March 4th, and then the next day is the start of the New Japan Cup on the 5th that runs until March 22nd. So this is a packed couple of months to start the year for New Japan, and you know, it will be limited capacity, but nonetheless still larger venues that they're running, and will require, you know, significant main events for some of these shows in the next few months.
I mean, I think all these shows are pretty much sold out, so there's no concern among the fans to attend these shows, John.
Well, what is Osaka Joe Hall would be roughly how many at, like, half capacity? What are we talking about?
Seven at half.
Jeez, that's if they're sold out both nights, that's very impressive this far out without a card.
I mean I've said this tons of times, Osaka is a hotbed for New Japan fandom. Like, those people in Osaka, they fucking love their New Japan more than any other pro wrestling company in the country. So yeah, they're pretty hardcore, John, and they're drawing from, like, Kobe and Kyoto and other places in the Hyogo, you know, Kansai region. So it's a lot of people who look at the Osaka shows as, like, a big deal. I mean, it's one of their major markets. That Yokohama and Tokyo are, like, I would say, the three biggest markets for New Japan. So, like, they're going to draw people from, like, all around the surrounding region.
What stands out to you of the main events that we have on these New Beginning cards? What are you looking forward to?
Honestly, like, the Tanahashi Shingo, that to me is like a dream match. But beyond that, like, honestly, it's Hiromu versus Sho. Like, these guys have awesome chemistry. And I just feel like 2021, like, you know, I'm a big Sho Tanaka fan. To me, it's like, this year, come on, he's got to do it. He's going to get put over by Hiromu. Hiromu's going to, you know, gracefully leave the junior heavyweight division, move to the heavyweight division. And then we're going to get the era of Sho as the junior heavyweight icon in the company, John. I'm all excited for that.
He then needs to turn and acquire a manager.
No, we can skip that part. But John, also, there, there's an 8-man tag between Daoki, El Desperado, Minoru Suzuki, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru taking on El Phantasmo, Ghetto Jado, and Taichi Shimori. This match is happening five fucking times on the New Beginning Tour. Three times in a row at Korakuen in the number two match slot. Unbelievable. The booking genius that this required, like, I don't know how Ghetto, like, figured it out. Let's just have the same fucking match five times on the tour.
So
really?
Next month, we're going to rank them from one through five. What's the best version of the 8-man tag?
You know what? Out of sheer curiosity, let's do that. I'm going to watch all five. And then we'll pick which one's the best one.
I would love if they just, like, you know, the WWF house show, they just, like, just cookie cutter every single night and see if anyone notices.
But these are all going to be broadcast on New Japan World Cup.
I know. Like, let's see who's watching. Let's find out. You and I will be. Okay, we'll watch these ones, okay? The run of the five nights of this eight-man tag. Finishing up on New Japan here, I know you want to talk a little bit about Jay White. I don't know what the status of his contract is. Like, we've heard the report of it could be up. Dave Meltzer noted last week that, you know, when AEW was getting started, they were told by White that he had just signed a 7-year deal. What do you think is the looking at, you know, whatever the status is, what do you think is like the ideal scenario for Jay White here? Because I think I don't know how much you enjoyed the second night main event, but I just think Jay White is coming out with so much momentum behind him. I would be very surprised that he's not continuing with New Japan this year.
I mean, my personal feelings aside, John, I mean, like, yeah, I saw people raving about that match. I didn't really enjoy it that much, to be honest with you. But, like, I understand why people like it, and I do think he got a little momentum. I thought he got even more momentum out of the backstage promo where people mm-hmm. were, like, the way people were talking about it, I thought I was going to – and then I watched it after. I thought, oh, okay, just going to see the wrestling equivalent of, like, fucking Daniel Day-Lewis and There Will Be Blood. But, John, there was no drinking of a milkshake in this fucking promo, just some emo boy crying about, like, he lost a match, okay? But people thought it was a great performance. Okay, so, but, you know, a lot of buzz out of that. I think he would be insane to leave. Honestly, I think it would be terrible for him, and I think it would be terrible for the company because, like, I think he's finally gotten out of the shadow of being placeholder Kenny. You know, like, that's what he was. When Ken Chan left, he became placeholder Omega, and I think he finally escaped the shadow of being that. And, like, for him to up and leave and go, I don't know, either AEW or the WWE – who knows? Like, I don't think it's happening. I think it's all a work, John. Like, I think he's staying, and I think he's intelligent enough to think, I'm gonna be a big star in this company, and I'm gonna have a lot of freedom to have the kind of matches I want. And especially, I think if he's slated to become a babyface, I think there's a point where he, like, the people who are doubters, like myself, might possibly come over and start supporting Jay White. I'm sure Stephanie Chase will be very happy to hear that.
Yes, I think she would as well. I think, you know, I looked at Jay White and I think it was remarkable that he is where he is now. When you look at what his 2019 was, like, you say it facetiously about placeholder Kenny, like, that was literally what he was. He was put into a position and he had to overcome that. And I think he did so. And it's not everyone's cup of tea, like, his style, but I think that I think you really got to see the evolution of this guy who, when he started as that Switchblade character, I mean, you talk about a fish out of water trying to become that Switchblade character. It was a very difficult fit for a long time. When you go to that first Dome show he did with Tanahashi to now, it's night and day. I think his attachment to New Japan, I just think it would be in his best interest. The guy is 28. If he were fielding offers, like, there will be a time that you can go and sign that crazy deal. I don't know if it would be now. And I'm expecting him back when the time's right.
I mean, John, if the WWE is, like, you know, parking up a fucking truck full of gold to his house, you know, wherever that is, you know, and he doesn't have to travel, you know, like, back and forth. Because I do think he's staying in the United States. Like, you know, if he doesn't have to travel back and forth, that's a big bonus too, especially during this pandemic. Also, like, you know, I did see that, you know, they trademarked a bunch of new names, including something called the Covenantator. Can you imagine Jay White is the Covenantator, whatever the fuck that is? That'd be awesome. I'd be totally down for that. That showing up. Forget NXT. Just put that on the main roster. Put it on Raw. Have him feud with The Fiend. Money.
So last thing here. Your prediction for the New Japan Cup is Will Ospreay.
Or Tanahashi.
I like the Tanahashi one. I'm sure they will get to that match at some point. And I guess they haven't explained, like, their calendar beyond that. If they're going to do their Sakura Genesis card at the end of this whole thing, I would imagine that they're going to run Osaka at the end of this for a big match. And I think Tanahashi and Ospreay are great choices.
I want to see what they're going to do with the G1. Like, honestly, if they move it back to the – if they move it into the fall again, I mean, they're planning on doing the Olympics still, so they're probably going to, right? I think that's a great idea. Move it permanently into the fall, John. It makes so much better sense booking-wise.
Yeah, I think that you really eliminated that lull this year. That is the gap between G1 and the Tokyo Dome. Like, if I never have to see another destruction card, I will not be complaining. I think that, you know, running it in the fall, it's to me just – it fills out their calendar a lot better. They were able to run a giant stadium show in August in its place. Like, there's definitely, to me, a lot of touring you can do in the summer, getting away from Tokyo and going to different parts. And when traveling is an option again, coming over to the U.S. for a big show in the summer. I think, like, that would be – I thought it was a really smart play to try and piggyback off of SummerSlam weekend before everything shut down.
Oh, yeah. I mean – I think once things open up, once most of us are vaccinated, John, like, it's going to be crazy as far as the wrestling calendar goes, whether it's in Japan or in the United States. I mean, nothing's really stopped in Japan, so they're doing fine, relatively speaking. I'm just curious to when, like, you know, the WWE is going to allow fans back into the buildings. That'll be really interesting. But when that happens and travel is, like, you know, more freer, and you know, people can travel back and forth with less restrictions, yeah, I think we're going to see New Japan probably try to hop back into the American market again.
Moving over to All Japan, some highlights of the earlier this month, we had Suwama and Shuji Ishikawa dropping the tag titles to Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi, with Aoyagi submitting Suwama, this on the eve of him challenging Suwama for the Triple Crown, which Suwama retained, and a really enjoyable Triple Crown match. And coming out of that, our next defense will be January 24th at Korakuen Hall, with Suwama defending against Shotaro Ishino. That sounds great on paper.
I mean, I love their first match, you know, and that was in front of no people. So they'll actually have fans, and this will be in Korakuen. So I think the atmosphere, even though it's a clap crowd, like, I still think you can get really decent, you know, atmosphere from the Japanese fans without having them be able to cheer. I got to say that this is going to be Suwama's fifth defense of his current reign, and it's going to be, you know, Ishino's second time challenging Suwama. I really think it's do or die for Ishino, and to me, it's so important for the company to make Ishino a main event guy in this company. He's got to win this match because they're so desperately in need of someone to join Miyahara in those ranks. I think Zeus has lost a lot of things. I mean, he won the Champions Carnival and then he lost his title challenge. I thought he's going to win that match, John. I thought he's going to be the next Triple Crown champion. I think, you know, him losing that match really hurt him, and I think it really hurt the All Japan roster. So, like, Ishino has to be the project. I think, you know, the thing with the title reign, the tag team title reign with Aoyagi and Miyahara, like, as next dream, this has to be, like, a long reign, in my opinion. I think Aoyagi really has to get the rub off being an equal to Kento Miyahara, not just being his second, his partner. He has to be his equal in this team. And I think in a lot of their title defenses, and I hope it's a long reign, that he has to get most of the shine. Miyahara doesn't need to get the shine, right? He can be the guy who gets all the heat put on him by the opposite team. And then, you know, Aoyagi gets the hot tag and cleans house on people, and he gets a lot of the wins instead of Miyahara, because Miyahara's fine. He doesn't need protecting. You need to elevate Aoyagi. You need to elevate Ishino, and you need to get the guys underneath them ready to get up there. And who knows, like, I'm hoping also this year we're going to get the return of Naoya Nomura, John. That would be so great for the company and me personally, because I'm such a huge fan of that guy.
They really need to address that gap. Like, it's there's a big concentration on, like, the over 40 club. It's like Suwama and Ishikawa, it's like they have their roles, but you're right, it's to me, fortifying that main event scene in addition to Miyahara. And I think that's – I feel each year I've said that over and over. And this is another one where it's like you need to, you know, take, you know, 3-4 guys, and not all of them are going to make it, but make them your projects this year. And if two make it, that's all the more better for your main event scene. That's you know, Ishino winning this on the 24th, I think would be – an interesting booking change to go with at this point and have someone fresh with the Triple Crown. And all of a sudden it's the guy has the title and it's all fresh matches, even if they're, you know, redoing other matches. But as Triple Crown champion, they feel fresh.
He has, I'm a huge fan of him because he has this aura about him, John. Like, he looks like a star and he carries himself like a star. And I think him with the Triple Crown title will do like wonders more for the company. I think it will really freshen up All Japan. And like, you know, if you've ever seen him when he was the Wrestle One champion, like, he made that belt a lot more important than it actually was because of his aura. And he's just a star, John. And I just really feel really high on him that he should be the Triple Crown champion and that it'll be a nice boost for the company in terms of, you know, artistically and at the box office.
What else are you looking at for this core Q&A show? We have Koji Iwamoto defending the junior heavyweight title against Fuminori Abe from Basara.
Oh, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Fuminori Abe. You know, like, you know, the Astronauts, John, his tag team with Takuya Nomura.
You are so high on this team. Yes.
I love this team. I've sent you links for some of their matches. I don't know if you've gotten around to seeing them, but I think once you start watching the Astronauts defend the Big Japan tag team titles on a regular basis, John, you will join me on the Astronauts rocket ship. And, you know,
I have to catch up on those.
Yeah. And then you're going to be like, WH, we need to get in on like getting some matching Astronauts t-shirts because they got some really sweet gear as well, as far as the merch goes. But yeah, like I think Abe and Iwamoto are going to kill it. Abe's so good. Like, this guy is like really one of the most underrated, like, underappreciated like wrestlers out there, because not too many people know about him. If you want to see really smooth, you know, like, if you remember Minoru Sawa, John, that he's basically that guy's disciple, and he's basically a clone of him without also having his own unique style. But yeah, that's gonna be awesome. But I don't know, like, honestly, like, it's kind of a bit stale right now in All Japan. I'm really hoping like the tag team titles and you know, we're going to be really freshened up with Next Dream being the champions and you know, Ashino, hopefully, crossing my fingers, John, on this, that he's going to become the Triple Crown champion. And I just want to say one thing.
Jun Kasai.
Fuck that shit. That's terrible. Like, Suwama has done an excellent job being the champion. I don't want to, like, people think that I don't appreciate his title reign this year. It's been awesome. Like, I think he's one of the most underappreciated, like, world champions in wrestling right now. And I think he's had a tough job, you know, being the champion during the pandemic. But every time he goes in the ring to defend that Triple Crown, John, I love the match. So, like, I just want to say, it's not that I don't like Suwama. I just think for the overall health of the company, it's got to go on Ishino.
No, like, the Aoyagi match is great. Great match. Like, he's fine as, you know, if you need someone to hold the title, he's not your long-term answer in 2021.
No, that's, I really feel this is kind of a make or break year for All Japan. I feel that way almost every year, but even more so now.
I've been watching quite a lot of Noah lately. So let's chat about this. Going back to January 4th, we had the surprise appearance by Hiroshi Hase as the mystery partner for Goshi Ozaki and Kaito Kiyomiya as they defeated Keiji Muto, Naomichi Marufuji, and Masato Tanaka in the main event of the January 4th show at Korakuen Hall. I guess Muto didn't want to be labeled the oldest man in this six-man tag, so 1 year his senior, Hiroshi Hase, came in. And I've got to say, WH, this was an awesome match to set up the GHC title match I want to see. That is Goshi Ozaki and Hiroshi Hase by the end. That's the match I want to see. Instead, Go pins Muto at the end of this, and your belief of what this leads to, I can't say I disagree. But this was a very – regardless of how they booked this Budokan main event, this was a very bizarre finish. And watching it, I was scratching my head that you had Go pin Muto before the title match.
Well, I mean, I'm always scratching my head at Nosawa Rangai's booking in this company. If you look at the junior scene in Noah, it's a complete mess. Like, every show has almost like a turn and like double, like at least two double crosses in the junior division, like people jumping factions and shit. So it's now kind of bled over into the main title picture. But I do think it doesn't mean anything. I think it's like a, you know, it's a false flag, John. It's signaling the inevitable, you know, win for Keiji Muto, who has a big supporter, a big fan in Nosawa Rangai, who also happens to be Pro Wrestling Noah's head booker. And I think it's going to be, you know, Kijimuto getting the hat trick, John, IWGP heavyweight champion, All Japan triple crown champion. He's going to become the GHC, you know, heavyweight champion as well. He's going to be one of the three other, he's going to be one of three men who's had that title, like the triple crown of the triple crowns, you know, like there's Takayama and then there's Kensuke Sasaki. And now we're going to have Kijimuto.
For all the shine we just gave Suwama, I mean, it goes tenfold for this reign that Goshi Ozaki has had in 2020 as GHC champion. And yeah, I mean, the way this is set up, it's like Muto came in, he beat Kiyomiya, and your theory that Muto wins this title at Budokan next month, and then the long term is Kiyomiya getting the pin over Muto. Does the end justify the means if it's Kiyomiya getting the big win over Muto, which if you are positioning this to be one big pinfall that Muto takes, again, the six-man tag, it was so stupidly booked in the end.
No,
wouldn't you want to preserve that, like that person that finally pins Muto as something? Like, what's the value here?
There's no value anymore, John. There's absolutely no value. The value is in beating Go and ending this legendary like title reign. It's one of the best ones. I'd say it's right up there with the epic Kenta Kobashi GHC title reign. And he's done it during a pandemic. Like Joey Shiozaki is, you know, just one of the MVPs of this year. Not my overall MVP of 2020 in pro wrestling in Japan, but like he's up there for sure. And I have a lot of respect for him, but he beat Kiyomiya for that title. And I think there would have been poetic. It would have been poetry if on this big return to Budokan, like which used to be like the homestead of Pro Wrestling NOAH for their epic title matches, that it should have been Kiyomiya who's the guy, who's the next guy. Like he is the guy already in their eyes, I think, that he beats goes to regain the title that he lost to him. I think that'd be more poetic. And then if you want him to have the rub of beating Muto, make it his first title defense. What's their harm in that? Like, people will say to me, but doesn't Muto have like this name value? Isn't he a draw? If he was a draw, John, Wrestle One would still be around to some extent, you know?
Yeah, it's, I mean, this match, it's more so of the curiosity of what is Muto able to do. This guy had double knee replacement surgery. 2018 he had it?
I think he's done that multiple times, John.
I mean, it's just like the guy is, I mean, this is more so like a science experiment next month at Budokan with Shiozaki and Muto. But I look at your scenario and I very much can see that playing itself out. Also on the January 4th show was a six-man with Takeshi Sagiura, Kazushi Sakuraba, and Kazunori Murakami, who has returned, defeating Kano, Katsuhiko Nakajima, and Masa Kitamiya, with Murakami choking out Kano. And do you want to just talk a bit about Murakami? You know, he had a serious like brain injury, what, like 13 years ago? And what's – he's been pretty much off for the last 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, he used to be like part of like the Inokiism crew in New Japan. He was like involved in like MMA during the height of Pride and all this stuff. And is like one of like Inoki's boys back in the early 2000s. And just a wild man, like one of the most intense brawlers you'll ever see in the history of wrestling, John. Like those of you who've seen him work in the early 2000s, you'll know what I'm talking about. For those of you who haven't, I'm sure if you can find stuff on YouTube, like just YouTube this man, Kazunori Murakami. He's like
awesome,
a crazy, crazy brawler. I think he might have won Best Brawler in the Observer Awards a couple of years, you know, in the early 2000s. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, again, like, you know, Nosawa Rangai thinks like, you know, like Pro Wrestling NOAH is like an ATM for his friends and people like he worships in wrestling. Like, and Murakami's one of those guys. Like, for some reason, Rangai has like this fascination with all these, you know, IGF guys, Inoki Genome Federation dudes, and like all the guys who are part of like the Inoki office back in the dark days of New Japan. And I don't care what anyone else says. Oh, WH, that was actually good. No, it was complete fucking shit. Terrible booking and terrible matches. But anyways, no, like I don't like this, to be honest with you. Good for him getting a payday, you know. But honestly, Kano should not be losing this belt to an old guy the guy can't even bother to wear proper gear, John. He's wearing a suit.
Yeah, he's wrestling in a suit. I guess following in the pantheon of past suit wearers like Loki.
It's Sure. I think Loki, I give Loki some credit. I think he's a bit more mobile in his suit. Like, to me, it looks like if, like, you know, if, like, the Undertaker decided to, like, wrestle in a fucking tuxedo, this is what he would look like, because, you know, he's got the MMA gloves. So that makes all the difference, John. You just put on some MMA gloves. Doesn't matter if you're wearing, like, you know, like a blazer and some fucking dress pants. You're still a badass.
Yeah. So he just choked out Keno here to set up the title match for the national championship on January 23rd. And then the Budokan show, that's February the 12th, which will be on Fight TV, which will have English commentary, I believe, with Shiozaki and Muto, Mara Fuji and Jun Akiyama against Kaito Kiyomiya and Yoshiki Inamura, and Daisuke Harada versus Seki Yoshioka for the junior heavyweight title. Those are the announced matches so far.
I'm really big on this tag match, John. I think Mara Fuji, like, when he's motivated, can have a good performance. And I think the same goes for Akiyama. I saw a recent match Akiyama had in the finals of a tournament in DDT against Kunosuke Takeshita, and that was fucking great. And Akiyama was a large part of why it was great. So those two motivated have a good performance, and I think they're going to be motivated to have a good match with these two guys. Kiyomiya is the next, you know, it's going to be the ace of this company. And Inamura is right on the tail. Like, he's still really young. He's still got to get a lot of seasoning in him. But it's obvious that they are very high on this guy. I think they look at him as being like the next Morishima. Hopefully not with the same problems that Morishima had later in his career and his life. But, you know, like, this guy's going to be – they see star in this guy. And I've seen, like, him have these flourishes in some of the tag matches he's had in over the last year. And, like, John, once this guy figures it out mentally – up in his brain, this guy's going to be like, people are going to be talking about this dude.
When's Fujita going to get his run with the title this year?
When he stops staring at his opponent across the ring, like, yeah, Fujita. No, God, I never want to see this man in a six man tag, let alone with the title, John.
What if it's a 6-second submission win against Masao Inoue?
Oh God, don't bring up Masao Inoue. It pains me to hear that man's name too. Honestly, just get rid of all the older people in the company. Seriously.
There's a lot of them on this roster, man. Like, you look at this, like January 4th, I think it shows you like there's tons of gems on the Noah roster and a lot of good stuff, but you also, like, this is a company that's like, it's tons of, you know, like, Osamu Nishimura is wrestling on the, Chiro Koshinaka was on this January 4th show. So I think, like, you've kind of outlined it. Like, there's a lot of great pieces to work with Noah, but it's their booking that is going to tell the tale this year.
Well, I mean, I used to like bang on them for like trying to copy New Japan, but they don't copy them in the most important way, and that's like New Japan pushes their younger talents, and that's what Noah needs to do. Like, I forget like the names you mentioned, Nishimura, Koshinaka, they're just you know, they come in once in a while. It's guys like Muhammad Yone, it's guys like Akitoshi Saito, it's guys like Masue, you know, Inoue. Like, you don't need these dudes, like, honestly. Like, I'm not for one for like getting rid of people, but you need to put them in like the first or second match only, and start pushing like all the guys underneath Kiyomiya, right? Like, Inamura is one of them. Like, and like, you know, I don't know what they're doing with Nakajima. Like, this is bizarre. Like, he just seems to be in this holding pattern. I'm hoping there's a grand plan for him, but I don't trust Nosawa Rangai's booking, to be honest with you, John. We'll see. Like, I think, you know, like, one thing that you have to say about like Noah is that, you know, Katsuhiko Nakajima has to be a big part of them going forward. He's still relatively young and in excellent shape, and he doesn't have any lingering, you know, injuries. And you got to de-emphasize even Sugiura. Like, that guy's a beast, but he's like almost, he's hitting 52, I think. So at some point, like, yeah, the wheels are going to fall off that dude. And Mara Fuji is like really, you know, kind of hit and miss, you know, so. It's Kiyomiya, it's got to be Nakajima. You know, Go's always bandaged up. Like, people think that's a work. I do think there's something to him being bandaged up all the time as well. So we'll see. I do think it's going to be really interesting to see who gets the push in Noah in this year, John.
It's also a very big year for Stardom. They're running their 10th anniversary card in March at Budokan Hall. But before that, there's a pretty big card coming up this weekend at Korakuen Hall, which will be headlined by Utami Hayashishita and Maika for the World of Stardom title, and then Julia and Natsuko Tara for the Wonder of Stardom title. But this is a pretty loaded show coming up on Sunday.
I mean, they also have two other singles titles matches. They also have the high speed championship held by Azumi. She's going to fight Kari Yoyama, which is nice to see. It's not her clown gimmick. Literally, her regular gimmick is she's a clown, John. Like, but she's going to be Kari Yoyama for this match, which I'm really excited to see. I think Yoyama is actually a very underrated, veteran Joshi wrestler. And then Sayada, she's going to defend her future Stardom Championship against Sayaka Unagi, who's, I think, one third of the trios titles holders with, who is it? It's Tam Nakano. And who's their partner? Oh, it's the girl who jumped from Toshi Jokyo, Mina Shirakawa. Mina Shirakawa. So they're the trios title holders, and Unagi's going to have a chance against the future Stardom Championship against Sayada. So I four singles titles, pretty big show, John.
This is a very big show on Sunday, and
sold out.
It's sold out at Korakuen Hall, and then they've got the Budokan show on March the 3rd. And we haven't talked about it on this show, but we did on the New Japan preview about everything involving Yoshiko and bringing her back in. How has this been met, and what do you see as the goal here of bringing her back and utilizing her on this Budokan Hall show?
I mean, it's really a win-win. It's a win-win for Stardom. It's a win-win for Seed Ring, which is like her home promotion. I think, there are people like me who are a little apprehensive about it. I'm just apprehensive about Yoshiko in general, but I'm very much an outlier on this, John. Like, if you go into the, into Joshi wrestling Twitter, like, most people are fine with her still being a wrestler, most people really like her. They like her TikTok where she's baking shit. She's very popular on that app, and like a lot of people like her wrestling, and like I think she's really played up the ugly incident with Ak Yasukawa to her benefit. But like Bushiroad ultimately made the decision, John, and they probably looked at it like that would draw at Budokan, and Yoshiko against the icon of Stardom, which is Mayu Iwatani. There's a match there. It's also there's this idea that Stardom wants to bring back a lot of their former, stars. Like Takumi Uroha was a couple of really high profile matches with Mayu last year. So that's kind of signaled okay, we're ready to bring back other people. Here's the other thing, John. I think at some point you're probably going to see Ak Yasukawa probably show up before this match, and maybe she's going to be in the corner, Mayu Iwatani. I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen, but let me just say I won't be surprised if it does.
Well, that was going to be my next question of how much do they lean into that versus it's more so implied. The audience knows the history. Like, does the Stardom go and kind of lean into that because that is where that's where the heat is, essentially.
If they are able to bring Ak Yasukawa in for promoting this match. Like right now she's an actress. She's not on television or anything like that, but I don't think she's really doing much where she would be able to say no if Bushiroad threw some money at her. Say, do you want to be part of this angle? Show up at Budokan, be in Mayu's corner, we'll give you this much money. I would say probably she'll likely say yes to that. And then if she gives her permission, okay, let's show the footage maybe. But then you get to think, we're gonna have to have a match between Ak Yasukawa against Yoshiko, and that's probably not gonna happen. So, you gotta keep the heat on, on Mayu against Yoshiko. So, it's kind of a double-edged sword bringing Ak Yasukawa possibly into this program.
Yeah, I don't know how much you want to shine a light on that. It's such an ugly incident that I don't think it paints the promotion in a great light either by putting such a spotlight on that. It feels very it just feels very exploitive too.
Well, I also don't think Yoshiko really wants to visit that. I think it took her a long time maybe to, like, I think she does play up to it a little bit with her character of being a bully, but I do think it took her a while to finally, you know, get people to see her beyond that incident. So we'll see if she would be willing to, like, revisit that.
What do you think is the ceiling for the show at Budokan Hall for stardom? Like, even, you know, with a limited capacity, like, what are you expecting for the show in March that will be their biggest in their history?
I think it'll probably sell out because I have a lot of faith that Stardom's going to load up this show, John. I really think they're going to get as many, like, stars in the Joshi world to appear at Budokan, like, in matches. I think they'll probably try to get some kind of involvement, like, probably, like, video messages from people like Kairi Sane and Io Shirai. Like, definitely not, they're not going to show up and they're definitely not going to have matches on the show. But I can see, like, you know, oh, we're going to have special VTR messages from these two stars. And, you know, they still have people out there who would, you know, who would draw money with, you know, the right report. Like, here's the thing, like, with Julia, Julia's their Wonder of Stardom champion, like, and I would argue the biggest star in the company right now. Like,
and she probably has, the most improved as well last year.
Definitely. Like, she has this really, like, you know, stormy history with her former promotions, Ice Ribbon, the way she left that company. There's a lot of heat there. If you get, like, an Ice Ribbon wrestler, like one of their big stars, like either, oh, God, sorry, I'm having a brain fart. It's either Maya Yuhiki or what's her? Oh, God, I forget her name. She's one of the people know who I'm talking about. Like, right now, like, some people are like, I'm trying to remember her name, John. But anyways, they get one of those two, one of the two big stars from Ice Ribbon in a match against Juliet. That'll help draw people into this show. But I think Stardom is probably one of the most consistently well booked promotions up and down the card. So I think it's going to sell out. That's my prediction.
Does it help or hurt doing the back-to-back nights at Budokan with New Japan doing their anniversary card?
I don't think it hurts because I think if you can do some, you know, cross promotion, people are going to be in the area. I guess it's like, oh, I can go see two shows. Like, I never think, like, you know, piggybacking off of another show hurts, even if it's in the same building. I think there's probably going to be some cross promotion, definitely. Like, and you're probably going to see some of the New Japan roster come in as guests, like, you know, I don't know, guest ring announcing or guest timekeeping. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm interested to see if you do see any of that. So even doing like the back to back nights, doing more of those experiments, because I think it does help. Depending on where it is, like this is a Wednesday, Thursday. I don't know if these dates are significant. Are they? These aren't holidays or anything. They're just regular weeknights.
Top of my head, I think so. Yeah, they're just regular weeknights. But, you know, like it's like when they did the back to back, you know, nights for the G1 finals, you know,
right?
Like that New Japan did. It didn't really hurt. Like maybe one night had a better attendance than the other, but they both did really well. I mean, they didn't lose any money. They made money. I think it'll be the same thing. Like, I think Bushiroad, for me, like I really think Bushiroad's just waiting out whatever TV deal Stardom has with whoever that they can. Okay, we're going to put them on the network we're affiliated with. We can start having these, you know, matches at Wrestle Kingdom, we can finally show them on New Japan World in the future.
Yeah, I think that most people would have loved to have seen the dark matches on the second night. You know, we'll trade you the four-way and give us the two Stardom matches.
And I got to think that they look at, like, you know, like Wrestle Universe, the DDT's, you know, streaming service that they share with Pro Wrestling Noah and with TJPW, that, you know, Bushiroad's like thinking, if we have one, you know, if we have one and we charge a bit more, then we can get rid of Stardom World and just put everything on New Japan World and just maybe rebrand it to Bushi Fight Road or something. Who knows? But and then just, you know, just charge more for a service that includes, you know, two like really popular promotions, John.
The last promotion will stop in Big Japan. What is going on with Big Japan in the near future, and what is the state of the light tube situation?
I think they're doing okay. I haven't heard anything about them, you know, asking the fans to please donate some light tubes or barbed wire or, you know, like mouse traps or things like that that they normally like to use in their death matches. I think they're pretty good on the shattering glass that's going to get embedded into people's backs. So A-OK on that front, John. Like, They just got a new Yasufumi Nakanoe became the strong champion, which I'm excited about. I think this guy's got a lot of upside to him. But, you know, for me, the big draw of Big Japan is the Astronauts, John. They're the current Big Japan Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champions, and they're going to have like a title defense against another great Big Japan team called Kazumi Kakuta and Ryuichi Kawakami. These guys have been teaming up for quite a while now, and like, that's going to be on their January 31st show in Aichi. Like, I'm very excited, John. Another excellent match from the Astronauts, and another match I'm going to send a link to you for, and hopefully you'll actually watch it this time.
I will catch up on the Astronaut stuff. I have been watching a lot of other various Japanese promotions, but I will watch some Astronauts tag action over the next month, and I will report back to you my thoughts.
John, like I know, like once you get on the Takuya Nomura train, you're gonna be like, I gotta see more of this guy.
All right, I will definitely check that out. Also, the Giant Baba Memorial card. I know you've seen the lineup. It's quickly. We won't go through everything here, but the main event is listed as Muto, who by this point, when's this taking place? This is on February 4th, so it'll be before the Budokan show. So we won't have potential GHC champion Keiji Muto, but he'll be teaming with Triple Crown champion Suwama and Satoshi Kojima against Kaz Hayashi, Masayuki Kono, and X.
Where's Kento Miyahara? I can't believe that he's X, because like, what would be the point of that? Like, you should have Kento Miyahara in this match. Like, it's Muto teaming with his two proteges, one Suwama and one is, you know, Satoshi Kojima. Like, and then Kaz Hayashi with, why the fuck did they put Masayuki Kono? That guy fucking sucks. He's not even a star, John. Like, you know, like, it should be Kaz. It should be maybe Shuji Kondo. Get him from borrow him from Dragon Gate, and it should be Kento Miyahara. Like, you know, or get Gyo Goshizaki or something. I don't know. Like, he used to be a Triple Crown champion. I don't know, John.
They've got five matches listed. Plus, they're going to air a Giant Baba Stan Hansen match in the middle. So you can go to an arena to watch a match on tape.
There you go, John. It's COVID times. It's hard to get people to come over. Like, they can't fly in Abdul the Butcher, you know, or Dory Funk Jr.
Well, we talked about this the other day. It's the idea of doing a show like this in this current pandemic where you are taking various locker rooms and mixing them on a show. I don't know if that's the wisest idea, because yes, you may have some companies that are testing, but certainly others that are not. And is this the best time to be doing this kind of show?
Well, no, I'll be honest. No, I'll be surprised if it actually goes through, and I'll be surprised if there's a lot of people who actually go to this show, John. I'll watch it, but I mean, on paper, it's a very weak card, especially compared to the last one they did with, like, you know, Tanahashi and Kento Miyahara in the same match. You know, like, you know, it was with Tanahashi and Daisuke Sakamoto taking on the team of Kento Miyahara and Yoshitatsu. But, you know, by the way, worst dressed of 2020. Yoshitatsu, holy shit, he looked terrible last year. But yeah, like that, yeah, Sekimoto and Tanahashi, first of all, they're teaming, and Tanahashi versus Kento Miyahara, oh my god. But do they have the equivalent of that this year? No, it's kind of sad, John.
Well, what's not sad is getting to hook up with you, WH, once again here on Post Pro Res. And you know, sometimes we have like a loose idea of when we're going to come back. I think that it's almost exactly a month. I think we should come back on either February 12th or 13th, and we'll do a review of the NOAH Budokan Hall show.
Oh, that sounds awesome to me, John.
That's a month from now, and we'll talk about new GHC champion Keiji Muto. So I was definitely planning to watch this show, and it times out perfectly for us to do our next show.
And we'll have watched all five of that 8-man tag from New Japan.
That's right. So everyone, here's our homework, okay? We're going to watch the NOAH Destination 2021 card. We're going to rank the five 8-man tags, which by match three, I think I will be regretting. And I'm going to watch some Astronauts over the next month. And WH, you can maybe check out whatever is going on with The Fiend, Bray Wyatt.
Hey, you know, I threatened to like come do like a main roster review with you guys, like, but you know what Wei says to me, controversy equals cash. So, you know, like, if you know, let me know. I would rather, honestly, do a SmackDown thing because I think I'd probably enjoy it. It's only 2 hours.
There'd be less guilt on us having you watch 2 hours than three. I think three, yeah. you'd get angry by probably hour two, and then you'd still have another hour left.
If it's a pay-per-view, I'm all for it. If it's Raw, I don't know about that. But you know the big draw is, John, like, you should maybe talk to the people at Fight TV about this. It's like when we're all vaccinated and it's safe to meet in person, we should do like a live streaming on Fight TV of me watching, you know, Raw at your house with you.
Oh my goodness. I don't know if they'd be ready. The buys would just be through the roof, WH. I think we would break the model.
And I'll bring sandwiches. I will bring some corned beef or like some, you know, Montreal smoked meat sandwiches, and we'll these people will like enjoy that.
Well, I look forward to it. It should be a fun show next month, so everyone can go check that out as well. We have Post Pro Res merchandise up at store.postwrestling.com. Two, I would say, tremendous shirts, but I mean, the fashionista is WH Park, and you give your thumbs up to these shirts.
I mean, well, I had some input in how they were designed, John. So yes, very much so.
Hey, you don't have to include that. Just say, yeah, they look fantastic. So go check those out at store.postwrestling.com. You can find WH Park all the time. WH Park and the number 9 on Twitter. The man does not sugarcoat anything. So you know what? You give him a follow. That is you approving of that feed coming in, and you will get the unvarnished truth from WH Park.
But just my opinion. I don't know if it's the truth, but it's just my
unvarnished opinion.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you know what? Like, there are things that make me happy. I talk about those. There are things that make me angry. I also talk about those. But I have toned down a little bit, John, in my Twitter age here. So I just think I need to calm down for the sake of my own blood pressure sometimes. So like, I don't get so much angry about so many things, but there are people out there who just rile me up, and I just go after them.
Any podcast appearances in the near future? You have done the media blitz over the last month.
I recorded something for Benno. I think they're doing at the Grapple Spotlight, they're doing their best of show. So I contributed like my opinions on what I thought were the best matches for me over the last year. And also, we just aired the latest edition of the Long and Winding Roller Road with Ed from Pod Van Dam, which I was talking about a great match between Mitsuhara Misawa and Jun Akiyama from 2000. I have an interview coming up. We won't talk about that. Just it hasn't been recorded yet, but I got an interview coming up with an author about a book that I really enjoyed. So when that comes out, we'll announce it. But, and then like I'm scheduled to record with one, you know, Dylan Fox over from the Eastern Laird, and we're going to do a retrospective, John, that's going to debut next month. It's going to be a retrospective about Toshiaki Kawada, Dangerous Ooh, K himself.
I love it. Okay. Well, look out for that in your podcast feed. And yes, the Long and Winding Royal Row, you can catch it every month here at postwrestling.com, the latest one covering the February 27th, 2000 match between Mitsuhara Misawa and Jun Akiyama. So go give that a listen.
I'm pretty sure I brought that to a Grady's, and I'm pretty sure you watched it at a Grady's.
I think you're right. I have definitely seen that match, and that is probably the source, that being WH Park, for that match. So that is it, everyone. We're going to wrap things up. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next month to talk about Do Not Pass Go, Keiji Muto.